fire. Holy water, holy money, holy money, holy money.
This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. We're coming to you from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, D.C. Thank you to all of you for joining us today. Now, in the wake of widespread revelations about sexual abuses committed by powerful figures in America's entertainment and political world, we are witnessing a global cultural shift or cultural awakening of sorts in the way we talk about and deal with issues related to sexual abuse, sexual assault, and harassment. Sexual abuse is such a pervasive issue that in America alone, the Bureau of Justice Statistics says that one in four women and one in six men will be sexually assaulted in their lifetime. And it's also common knowledge that many of these abuses or assaults take place with the awareness of at least one other person or people. In this case, they are referred to as third-party observers. And so as the conversation shifts on how to deal with the perpetrators of these sexual crimes, we are also beginning to talk about those that are aware of such crimes, the bystanders, so to say, as one researcher calls them. And so part of the debate now is that if you witness a crime, in this case a sexual crime, assault or battery, what should you do? Are you obligated to report it to the police? What if you're aware that a crime is going to be committed, but you do nothing to prevent it from occurring? Can you be criminally charged, or should you be criminally charged for not acting to stop it or even reporting it? Do you have a moral or legal obligation to act or to report? Dr. Zachary Kaufman is a lecturer in law and fellow at Stanford Law School in California. He's also a senior fellow at Harvard Kennedy School of Government. He recently published research that examines what are known as bad Samaritan laws. You know, the kind of laws that impose a legal duty for anyone witnessing acts of sexual crimes to assist and report such crimes. He tells me that in this era of the Me Too movement, it is necessary to align law and society more closely with morality. But before we start our conversation today right here on Upfront with Mr. Kaufman, let's listen to your opinions on this particular topic. What is your obligation, or what should be your obligation?
I think by law, it is accepted for one to report sexual harassment. But another thing comes in that maybe the authorities at the end of the day, they do not fulfill or work to the expectations of to enforce the law. Now, the law can be there and it is not enforced. At the end of the day, it becomes dormant and the sexual harassment looks normal. Now you find someone can report the case and it's someone who is inferior, coming from a humble family. What do I mean? Someone who is from poor family. And the person who is carrying out that sexual harassment is someone who is rich or wealthy. Now, because of that, one can report the case. At the end of the day, the authorities may be bribed, and then there they may not carry out an investigation, which also affects what that and the.
Hello, Upfront Africa. I'm Susan Akrapa, a student of KIA. I study business administration. Yeah, it is. They should report. Actually, sometimes these young kids, maybe the students, are harassed by teachers. And also, ladies, sometimes at employment, like you're forced to first have sex before you get a job. Yeah, there should be a law to at least stop it. And ladies should be given right to decide.
You are listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. If you're just joining us, we are discussing people's roles in reporting sexual assault and sex crimes. And these are third-party observers, the people who are watching or observing as these crimes take place. And our guest, Dr. Zachary Kaufman, classifies them as either upstanders or bystanders, depending on their action or reaction to these crimes. And Mr. Kaufman is researching on the Good Samaritan and Bad Samaritan laws. These are the laws that would hold people accountable, legally speaking, for not reporting or acting to stop such crimes that occur with their knowledge.
An upstander intervenes, whereas a bystander does not. And so whether the situation is a crime or a crisis, the bystander remains passive whereas the upstander becomes actively involved.
Okay. And so you suggest that countries, nations, need to be more aggressive, to have an aggressive approach to how they deal with people who are aware of crimes, and in this case, sexual crimes. These are third-party observers, people who are standing by as these actions or these acts are taking place. How can you codify what should or could be a moral duty to report sexual crimes?
So taking a step back, you know, I think an eternal question for us all to consider is what duties, if any, we owe our fellow human beings, and whether they are, you know, our relatives or our friends or colleagues or our neighbors or maybe even strangers. Mm. You know, in a time of crisis, what is morally and perhaps even legally what should be incumbent upon us all to have as responsibilities? So here in the United States, I've been particularly concerned recently, as have many people, with revelations from the Me Too movement about sexual crimes. So the Me Too movement has shown not only how rampant such sexual abuse is, but also how often third parties disregard or even enable it. And so that's led me to wonder if there are things that we might be able to do to prompt would-be bystanders to act instead as upstanders. And so in my current research, I've proposed both positive incentives and negative incentives, or carrots and sticks, that would prompt these third parties to become more actively involved. And so the carrots would be to reward people who become involved, and the sticks, as it were, would be to punish bystanders through what are called bad Samaritan laws.
So basically, if somebody is watching an act of sexual abuse or harassment taking place and they do not report it, they should be punished?
Generally speaking, yes. Although in my prescriptions, I include a number of kinds of bystanders that would be excused. Mm. So there are six
categories. There are some exemptions to it.
That's right. Exactly. And I've come up with six. So children, for example, should be excused. Those who what I call unaware bystanders are those who don't exactly understand what they're viewing. So they should be excused. Mm. And what I call endangered bystanders, so those who would be personally at risk if they
reported. Right.
That's
so,
right.
So if you find yourself in a situation where if you reported what was going on, it would have repercussions on you. You would be physically injured or harmed by the person that you're reporting. That person is exempt.
That's right. And there could be other ways that the person, that the situation could lead to peril that would merit, in my view, an exemption. So perhaps it could lead to someone else also being endangered in some way. Mm. So those are three, children, unaware bystanders, and endangered bystanders. Survivors themselves should, I think, be excused. Of course, they've already suffered trauma.
Right.
And should not be,
because we do hear these arguments sometimes when people come out a couple of years later and report acts of sexual violence or assault that were committed on them. When they finally report them, people will often ask, why did it take you that long? And there's this tendency to disbelieve what they're saying because they took time to report.
That's right. And of course, it's understandable why some people take quite some time or might never report a sexual crime that's been committed against themselves. So, yet another category I would argue should be exempt are what I call confidants. You know, we want survivors, of course, as a society to entrust, you know, their experiences in other people. You know, it can be part of the healing process and a necessary aspect of that that process. And so confidants, those that survivors ask not to report, I also believe should not be required.
At that point, you have an obligation to the person who is telling you in confidentiality about something that happened to them. So
exactly.
It would be unfair for the law to expect of them to report, to take that to law enforcement.
That's exactly right. Mm. And then the final category, I would argue, this sixth category of individuals that I think should be exempt from these sort of duty to report laws would be what I call self-incriminators. Mm. And here in the United States, of course, there's a constitutional protection against incriminating yourself in a crime. Mm. And so in a situation where you would be incriminating yourself in the underlying crime or a related crime, I also believe that those individuals must be exempted from these sorts of bad Samaritan laws. So those are the six exemptions, but all others, I believe, should be subject to these duty to report laws.
Okay.
Dr. Zachary Kaufman is a lecturer in law and fellow at Stanford Law School in California. He's also a senior fellow at Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
My name is Gomoy Isaac, student at Kampala International University studying information technology. I think it is an obligation to report sexual harassment because there are some like people have been suffering this assault or insults by different people.
Hello, Afront Africa. My name is Bukenya Edwin. I'm doing business administration at Kampala International University. Some students may prefer to report, but some of them, they have fear within them. Yeah, I think that law should be passed through, and I think it will help like young people like us. And also, it is not only in campuses. Also, like in a job field, when you want to apply for a job, more especially those ladies, they are harassed sexually so that they can access their jobs that they really want to get. They should be a law.
This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. On the show with me is Dr. Zachary Kaufman. He's a researcher, a lecturer in law. He's also a fellow at Stanford Law School in California. He joins me on phone, and we're talking about the role or the obligation of people in reporting sexual crimes. And part of our conversation, we're talking about this culture that has normalized and that has often reinforced sexual violence. We're also talking about the recent revelations of sexual misconduct, usually by people in positions of power, and as they continue to unfold in the U.S. and in other parts of the world. Let's also remember that many African countries, there are no legal protections for women against such types of violence.
So would you argue that one has a legal duty or a moral duty to report sexual misconduct?
Generally speaking, yes. A moral duty, at least. Whether they have a legal duty, of course, just depends on whether the law exists in that jurisdiction. And so part of what I'm trying to make the case for is that we should spread, standardize, and strengthen these laws so that more people are subject to them. Mm-hmm. One of the huge revelations, I think, from this Me Too movement really has been just how widespread knowledge has been of sexual crimes. Right. And perhaps if more people, had come forward, maybe we would have seen fewer of these abuses. Crimes committed.
Right. And it is quite striking how often these abuses take place and how other people have reason to suspect what's going on, but they never speak out. Why do you think people are often hesitant to speak out in cases where they have viewed or they have seen or they have experienced or they have observed these incidences of sexual abuse? What is that hesitation?
So I think there's a range of reasons, and I think it can vary per context. We know from what some bystanders have said themselves in certain high-profile cases that indifference, unfortunately, tragically, is part of the reason that some people simply don't care. Mm-hmm. And also are other people, you know, in a more charitable view of why some people might not speak up, some people are scared. Some people are genuinely afraid for themselves and others if they were to speak up. You know, there are also other reasons that people offer for why they didn't speak up, but we don't, you know, it's difficult to determine sometimes if they're true. So, you know, in the case, one of the high-profile cases right now involves Jim Jordan, a congressperson who is seeking to become the next Speaker of the House. And he maintains that in the case of Richard Strauss at Ohio State University, who's been accused of abuse of wrestlers, mm-hmm. Jim Jordan argues that he didn't know. And so ignorance, you know, may be another reason that some people claim they, you know, is the reason that they don't speak out. And of course, you know, those claims may not be true.
Valid, yes. Now, Zach, as we're coming to the end of our conversation today, in this age, I want you to chime in on this issue. We've covered this in the past. In this age of social media, where people often care more for clicks and going viral, we have seen a tendency for people, and not necessarily young people, for people to be casual observers to acts of violence, often taking out their phones to film it, but they never do act to stop it or report it. Do you believe that technology, especially in this age of social media, has made us more of bystanders and less upstanders?
Certainly the advent of both social media and mobile devices has made it possible for more people to witness sexual crimes and other crimes and crises. And that raises, of course, lots of difficult questions about whether those people should be held culpable for being bystanders, whether morally, legally, or both. And if so, you know, what should be appropriate penalties? But it's certainly clear from various high-profile cases that because of social media and mobile devices, more and more people are becoming aware of crimes, even those and crises, even those as they occur because of live streaming. There was a crisis recently in Florida that was posted to YouTube, where a man was drowning, and five teenagers recorded themselves mocking him.
Absolutely.
As he drowned, and then posted it to YouTube. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of the reason, of course, was probably so that they could obtain attention.
That's interesting that you bring up that example, because that's exactly the same example we were talking about when we were discussing this issue.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is a difficult, you know, situation to probe and to try to figure out how to address. Florida, at least, you know, at the time and still, doesn't have a law on the books that would have mandated reporting from these five teenagers. So they did not get into legal trouble. Mm. But, of course, morally, many of us are outraged. And some people in the Florida legislature have been considering introducing a law that would have required them to report. Mm. That law has not been accepted. But, you know, it warrants, I think, our discussion of whether there should be some sort of legal duty to report in such cases. I also would like to, since you mentioned the digital age, I don't think that we should be thinking only about the viewers in the sense of users of social media. I think real questions arise about the role of social media companies. Mm. Because, of course, through the use of both artificial intelligence and user reports, social media companies sometimes become aware themselves,
right,
of crimes and crises that are being broadcast, or their pictures of, or textual evidence of, on their platform.
Right.
And so we also should consider what, if any, role social media companies like Facebook and YouTube at Google should also shoulder for dealing with crimes and crises. And I've been, as part of my research, I've been speaking with some of these companies, and they do have some internal guidelines that they do implement for liaising with law enforcement and emergency services.
There's also an argument that has been, I'm sorry, I did cut you off. You were saying that there's an argument to be made for these social media companies to liaise with law enforcement or to report to law enforcement if people are in danger of if they did post videos of crimes or incidences that warrant looking into by law enforcement. But what about their responsibility to bring down those videos or the content that fall within that category?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Jackson. In some situations, certainly certain content should be censored so as not to, you know, facilitate the crime. My understanding from my research is that, it's a context-dependent issue that the social media companies consider. But I think that this topic that you're raising about, you know, bringing down content or censoring content, is something that we should all think more about. So, for example, in the case of someone discussing suicide, which is something that in my research I have found comes up quite often on social media. The question arises of whether it's better to continue the interface so that the person can continue talking with friends and other loved ones, or whether the feed should be stopped. And these are really thorny issues that social media companies are dealing with, but also they're, seeking advice from law enforcement and, suicide prevention professionals to try to determine what is the best,
The best approach. And I guess this is also a conversation that society as at large should be having on how to deal with these issues. But let me ask you as we conclude this, is there an argument to be made that, say, documenting or filming an incident without necessarily putting a stop to it or acting to stop it in real time, but going ahead and posting it online is a way of being an upstander?
It certainly can be, and we're finding that in the case of, for example, Syria, that some upstanders, some individuals are trying to document atrocities precisely to both raise public awareness of their perpetration, but also with the hope that perhaps some of the documentation could be used at a later stage as evidence to try to investigate and prosecute atrocity crimes, including war crimes and crimes against humanity. Mm. So documentation certainly can be useful. And again, it's a context-dependent question that arises in which you need to balance the privacy rights of victims with the benefits of exposing a particular situation.
Now, do you think these upstander laws should be applicable to other crimes aside from sexual violence or sexual assault?
Yeah, so duty to report laws, yes. First of all, just to back up, I mean, they do exist in several dozen countries already. By my count, they're in about 29 states in the United States already. There's a new federal law that Senator Feinstein sponsored that requires the reporting of child abuse in certain contexts. I just want to mention that some of these laws already do exist. What I'm proposing is that the scope be considered and the particular crimes to which they apply be considered. So here in California, for example, the duty to report law only applies to the situations where the victim is 14 years old or younger. And, of course, adults deserve protection, too.
Mm.
And so I would argue that age restrictions on, for example, abuse, including sexual abuse, should be lifted, that, you know, such a duty to report law should apply more broadly. But I would also argue that such crimes shouldn't just apply to sexual abuse, but also to other serious violent crimes or felonies, such as murder, kidnapping, human trafficking, and the like. So yes, we can start as inspiration from the Me Too movement's revelations of widespread bystanderism, but then we should, I think, use that inspiration to consider the full range of offenses and crises to which such duty to report laws should apply.
Zachary, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Thank you very much, Jackson. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
And with that, we come to the end of our conversation with Dr. Zachary Kaufman. We want to thank all of you for joining us today. And we also want to thank Zachary Kaufman, Dr. Zachary Kaufman, for speaking to us today right here on Upfront on the Voice of America. We want to thank all of you who sent in your opinions on this topic, very important topic. This is a conversation that obviously continues online. If you want to connect with me, my handle is at Upfront Africa. That's on Twitter. You can check us out on Facebook pages, keywords Upfront Show VOA. Continue the conversation, interact with us, let us know what you're talking about in your communities, some of the things that affect you. We'll catch you next time right here on Upfront. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Goodbye. Lifetime insurance, yeah. Assurance.
This is V.